The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Step into the realm where reality blurs and the inexplicable reigns supreme. Throughout the annals of history, tales abound of those who stumbled upon the extraordinary lurking within the shadows of lakes, the depths of forests, and the forgotten corners of our world. From the elusive Sasquatch to the cryptic creatures that haunt our imaginations, the quest to uncover these mysteries grips the heart of adventurers and enthusiasts alike. But amidst the thrill of the hunt lies a darker truth, which we will see in the chilling encounters you will hear tonight. Because for some, the brush with these unknown things brings not excitement, but an unshakable sense of doom, a primal fear that reaches into the depths of the soul. What if, beyond the comforting walls of civilization, there exists a realm inhabited by entities beyond comprehension? The legendary Australian researchers Tony Healy and Paul Cropper, borrowing the term from the H.P. Lovecraft story The Very Old Folk, dubbed this intense blind terror the nameless dread, which is that bone-chilling feeling that grips those who dare to peer into the abyss of the supernatural and then something stares back. Welcome to a world where the unimaginable lurks in the shadows, but when it catches your eye, it will never let you go. I'm Peter Laws, and tonight on Frightful, we explore the nameless dread. In 1954, Miss Georgina Carberry was on a trout fishing trip with three friends. She was a librarian from Clifton, and they were headed out to fish at Loch Fada. This small Connemara loch lies in a place called Darragimla and a bog of some 35 square miles, dotted with small lakes connected via streams. The friends enjoyed a good day's fishing. But in the late afternoon, an event occurred that changed their lives forever. She was later interviewed by a researcher called Ted Holliday. The friends had witnessed something inexplicable. They saw a creature emerge from behind an island in the loch. The object was a series of humps, and the length above the waterline was maybe about 30 feet. Now, this would be remarkable enough, but then a head and neck emerged from the water, and within that head was a mouth, and that mouth was filled with shark-like jaws. A tail reared up out of the water behind it. Not only that, this serpentine creature began to move toward the group. Each of them were gripped with a deep and sudden sense of fear, one that really was more akin to total panic. Georgina Carberry said this, quote,
"It seemed like wormy, you know, creepy. The body seemed to have movement all over it, all the time."
The group fled in terror to their car, bundling inside, breathless and afraid. Their panicked eyes were looking around to see if this rippling beast was loping after them, and they drove away at top speed, as fast as they could, to get out of the place. Now, when asked if this sighting had affected her, Carberry was very open about it. She said she really was affected. I don't think I went back to that lake for 6 or 7 years after. And when we went back, we would never go alone. Never alone. Carberry confessed to Holiday that she was actually absolutely terrified on the drive back home and found herself watching for the monster. She was so convinced of its reality that she thought that it might have slithered out of the bog and would pursue them at any moment. And once she was far away from the loch, you would think that maybe she could relax again, but there was something about this experience that lingered with her. She said she would suffer from terrible nightmares about the thing for weeks afterwards. One of the other witnesses in the group was similarly affected. For her, the relentless sense of dread and threat simply would not go away, and she eventually had a nervous breakdown over this incident and was hospitalized. There have been many, many sightings of what seems to have been a strange animal lurking in the water. The people who witness them are often shocked, but might even be excited to have glimpsed a rare animal. And so what do we make of cases like Georgina Carberry's, who said that there was this added element of threat and violence and a lingering sense of doom? Well, this idea of pursuit by some kind of monster is a factor we see again and again in reports of these different types of creatures, including places like the famous Loch Ness. The immense and seemingly unnatural level of fear these creatures can generate in witnesses are also seen at the most famous of monster lakes, Loch Ness. Mr. Richard Jenkins and his wife saw the horror from their lochside house on the 30th of September 1974. The couple watched the thing emerge from the water, and they observed it through binoculars for half an hour. It seemed to have been around 18 meters in length, about 60 feet. Again, the sighting seemed to be more complicated than just seeing some unique and undiscovered animal, because this experience had a lasting effect on them as a couple. Later, Richard Jenkins said this, quote,
"I felt the beast was obscene. This feeling of obscenity still persists, and the whole thing put me in mind of a gigantic stomach with a long, writhing gut attached."
Mrs. Greta Finley, an Inverness housewife, had similar feelings towards the thing when she encountered it at close range on August the 20th, 1952. She'd gone fishing with her young son and was on the northeast shore of a loch near Aldury Pier, just off Tor Point. She said this,
"I was sitting outside the caravan when I heard a continual splashing in the water. After several moments passed and realizing this was not the usual wash from a boat, I walked around. To my surprise, I saw what I believed to be the Loch Ness Monster. My son and I stood looking at this creature in amazement. Although I was terrified, we stood and watched it until it submerged, which it did very quickly, causing waves to break on the shore. And we had an excellent view as it was so close to the shore. And this was not a pleasant experience. I certainly never want to see the monster again."
Now, Mrs. Finley was interviewed by the late Tim Dinsdale, one of the greatest Nessie hunters of them all. She confessed to him that actually her phrasing of "it was not a pleasant experience" was an understatement. She told him that she had been paralyzed with fear and that her son had been so utterly horrified that he had given up fishing there altogether. There was no way he would ever set foot anywhere near that water. And she stated that she would never want to see that monster again, even if it were behind 6-inch steel bars. Ted Holiday came to the conclusion that these water serpents were not surviving plesiosaurs or giant eels, but that they were actually supernatural manifestations. In his book, The Dragon and the Disc, he concludes that they are literal dragons. Now, I can't lie. When I hear people say things like supernatural dragons exist in the world, my brain reacts with a, really? You know, dragons? Like you see in Lord of the Rings? But sometimes I do think our terminology can trip us up. that if we park the baggage of a word like dragon for a second and instead just focus on what Holiday is suggesting, that there are malevolent and supernatural creatures out there, whatever they may appear like or how they might be labeled as serpents, dragons, monsters, creatures, they have been sighted, even since the times of Babylon. What could they be? Behind all the language are simply people seeing strange things. They aren't just unexplainable, however, they are unshakable in their effect. Well, in the cases we've looked at so far, people have felt a sense of threat and dread with their sightings, but at least they survived. But not everybody does. And for that, we go to Florida. Sometimes monsters do not stop at scaring people almost to death. Instead, they go the whole hog and kill them. That's what's claimed in our next eyewitness account, which happened one sunny morning on the 25th of March, 1962. A group of children were walking along a beach several miles from Pensacola in Florida. They came upon what they thought was the drowned body of a teenage boy, but to their amazement, the youth was still alive, though barely. The boy was rushed to Pensacola Naval Base Hospital. He was suffering from shock, exposure, and exhaustion. He was identified as Edward Brian McCleary, who had been missing since the previous morning along with four friends. When he was strong enough, he spoke to the director of search and rescue units, a man called E.E. McGovern. His story was truly astonishing, like something out of a pure nightmare. The boy, McCleary, claimed that his companions had been killed by a monster in the water. It began on the morning of 24th of March 1962 when Edward, along with his friends Eric Rule, Warren Sully, Brad Rice, and Larry Bill, had set out to go diving off a wreck in Massachusetts, several miles off the coast of Pensacola. As they rowed out on their 7-foot Air Force life raft, they found that the tide had become stronger than they had anticipated. Storm clouds began to gather, and the boys decided this was dangerous and they wanted to turn back. Several of them swam behind the raft, pushing it, but as the waves grew higher, starting to swamp the raft, they swam to a 20-foot buoy or buoy and clambered onto its metal scaffolding, panicked, thinking they were in great danger. In the violent storm that followed, the raft was sucked fully under, and the buoy was rocked by lashing winds and icy rain. And yet finally the maelstrom passed, and a fog rolled in as the sea became millpool calm. They might have thought their ordeal was over, but it had only begun. Because at that point, a foul smell, something akin to dead fish, filled the air. And a strange whining cry echoed through the darkness. And then something as long as a telegraph pole reared up out of the water and plunged back in. The boys panicked and jumped off the raft. Behind them, they heard hissing and splashing, and suddenly Warren yelled out, "Help me! It's got Brad! It's got Brad!" Warren's cries were abruptly cut short. The three remaining boys huddled together and tried to swim for the shore, and then something grabbed Larry from below and dragged him under. Eric was becoming exhausted, and Edward tried to help him stay afloat, but the sea, now turning choppy again, dragged them apart. And then he claimed that a monstrous beast reared up from the deep. It had snake-like neck, gleaming green eyes, and a gaping maw that fell down on Eric and dragged him under the waves. Swimming for his life and expecting to feel this creature's teeth in his flesh at any moment, Edward was exhausted and felt the relative tranquility of death. And he recalled nothing further until he was in hospital waking up. Unsurprisingly, he suffered a breakdown afterwards because the nameless dread of this creature had its claws in him and would never let go. The police decided that it would be better for them all if they kept the creature out of their official report. But E.E. McGovern said to Edward this:
"The sea has a lot of secrets. There are a lot of things we don't know about. People don't believe in these things because they are afraid to. Yes, I believe you," he said to the boy, "but there's not much else I can do."
Frightening encounters with strange and threatening creatures do not only take place on the water, however. Like this disturbing case from Venezuela. Italian archaeologist Pino Tirola was told a bloody story by an Indian guide in Venezuela. Antonio, the man in question, had gone with his two sons to the Pacarema range, and as they approached the savannah, three lumbering beasts staggered out. He said they looked like apes with smallish heads and disturbingly long arms, and these creatures attacked the man and his son with clubs, killing his younger son. Some 6 months later, Tirola persuaded the Indian guide, Antonio, and some other Indian people to show him the area in question. And so they went there, and they explored the grounds on which this attack was said to have taken place. They heard shrill roars coming from somewhere in earshot, and when the natives heard this sound, their faces dropped at the nameless dread, and they refused to go any further. Tirola himself even claimed to have glimpsed an 8-foot ape-like lumbering form.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For our next case, we return to the United States, and it comes from a surprising source. In his book, Wilderness Hunter, former US President Theodore Roosevelt recounted a disturbing story that was told to him in 1892. It was relayed by a grizzled old trapper called Bowman. 50 years before, Bowman and a friend had been trapping in the Bitterroot Mountains between the Salmon and Wisdom Rivers, that's in Idaho. The area had an unpleasant reputation, as a year before, a trapper called Cluey had been killed and half-eaten by an unknown predator. After their first day of trapping, the men returned to their camp, only to find it in disarray. They assumed this was the work of a bear. But that night, an upright, walking, foul-smelling beast attacked their shelter. Bowman shot at the monster, but it slipped into the shadows. But it didn't leave them. All night, this thing circled the camp, making harsh, grating, long, drawn-out cries. And in the morning, the scared men decided it was time to head back to civilization. Bowman went to collect the traps while his friend packed up the camp. But on returning, Bowman found the camp strangely quiet. Unsettled, he started to look around, and that's when he found it. He came across his friend's body, lying by a spruce log. His neck had been broken, but even worse, his throat was gored with visible fang marks. The corpse was not eaten, but Bowman had the feeling that the creature had thrown the body around like a toy and then rolled over and over on top of the corpse in delight. Now, I was confused by this last detail until I discovered that apparently dogs have this habit. When a dog sees a dead animal, it will sometimes climb onto its carcass and roll around. Why? It's trying to pass its scent onto the animal corpse, claiming territory so that other dogs will know that the animal carcass belongs to that dog. I literally found a pet website that gives dog owners advice on how to stop your dog rolling on dead animals and how to get the smell of dead animals out of your dog's fur. So it's a thing. Does that mean that the creature rolling around on Bauman's body was doing the same? To make a clear signal to one and all that this man's corpse now belonged to it? Bauman fled that place on horseback, riding through the night, and he never returned to the Bitterroot Mountains. There's another type of creature that is said to bring with it the nameless dread. And that is the Yowie. The Yowie is a creature in Australian folklore that is said to live in the vast outback. Yet there are surprising amounts of eyewitness reports that claim that these ape-like creatures actually exist. Tony Healy interviewed a 17-year-old youth called Len, who with some friends had encountered a Yowie near Cotter Dam, Australian Capital Territory. This happened on one night in 1990. After hearing strange cries and footsteps in the scrub, the youths retreated to their campsite in the park below the dam. And as they walked, their stalker overtook them, running faster than any human possibly could. And it vanished into the shadows ahead. It reappeared under a streetlight some 50 meters from them. This creature looked as if it was shaped like a man, but it was covered in grey hair and seemed to move with a blurring speed. And it emitted a weird moaning sound. The youths became very frightened and thought they might find safety in an outback pub. Yet when they reached this pub, they were horrified to find that it was actually locked and deserted. So all they could do was huddle together on the steps of this deserted place, clutching their penknives and literally crying with fear. What an image. Those late teens sobbing with the crushing realization that the nameless dread had found them too. Len spotted a phone box near this pub and he frantically ran to it so he could call his mother. When she answered, he just blurted out, begging her to pick them up. Worried, she agreed and hurried to her car. By the time she got there, the thing had vanished. But the atmosphere of terror remained, like a lingering coldness, and they all felt exposed and watched. This feeling did not subside even when they got in the car. As they drove back home, they all had this overwhelming sensation that this thing was going to follow them, chase them, hunt them. Like it had gotten a taste of them and would not stop until it found them, claimed them as its own. Even Len's mother, who hadn't even been present at the time of the sighting, started to feel that dread in the car. She collapsed into fearful tears of her own, as if it was contagious. Len, the 17-year-old son, suffered nightmares for a long time afterwards. How interesting, I think, to see how similar this Australian experience is to Georgina Carberry's experience, the encounter at Lochfarter with that monster who affected her and her friends so deeply. Another witness, known only as R, encountered a so-called Yowie while parked on the Mount Kembla Road in New South Wales. R gave a graphic description of the nameless dread, saying he had, quote, a bad feeling. He looked over his shoulder to see that his car was being approached by a man-like beast with glowing red eyes and hair on the skin.
My immediate reaction was to flee. I had this feeling I was being hunted and an immense feeling of dread. Like someone had drained all the lifeblood out of you. An awful, awe-inspiring feeling of like all your senses come alive. It's very hard to explain.
In 1996, Dean Harrison was jogging one night near Ormeau in Queensland, and he began to get the feeling he was being followed by something that stayed hidden by the bush. The thing brought a horrid sensation with it. Quote,
I just had an indescribable chill that ran from my head to my toes. the unfamiliar and hugely terrifying sensation just overtook my entire body. I simply could not understand why I suddenly felt so uneasy and so vulnerable as I did. But I knew something was terribly wrong, and it had something to do with whoever or whatever was behind me.
Turning round, he saw a 7-foot hulking silhouette in the trees. Dean felt paralyzed and had to force himself to move. The creature pursued him with a blood-chilling roar, and he narrowly escaped its grasp as it lunged for him from the bush line and he dodged into the light of a street lamp. Jerry and Sue O'Connor, whose property backs onto the forested wilderness of the Blue Mountains, have had many Yowie sightings. They, too, speak of the weird effect the creatures seem to have. They describe a, quote,
sickening electrical feeling in the kidneys
that they liken to liquid nitrogen. It induces paralysis and can even waken them from sleep, it is so intense. They feel that the Yowies somehow project this feeling of dread onto them, leading increasing numbers of researchers to wonder if these hidden animals in our world might actually be more mysterious than we ever thought possible. What happens if they are supernatural in origin? Like the freaky experience we'll hear of next. Bolam Lake is a small country park in Northumberland in the northeast of England. It has a lake surrounded by woodlands and is about 800 meters across. Back in 2002, there was a spate of sightings of an ape-like creature. Now, obviously, nowhere in the UK could support such animals if they were simply flesh and blood. But what happens if something stranger is at work? One witness said, there's a woman called Naomi and her 14-year-old son, how she heard these stories of Bigfoot at Bolam Lake, and so they both drove over to investigate. When she parked her car, Naomi and her son heard a strange, eerie call from the woods, and they got out of the car and saw a tall, hairy creature standing in the trees about 100 feet away. Now, this is the detail that struck me. Though the creature was standing totally still, the mother and the son claimed that it felt like it was somehow rushing towards them. That's a very unique detail. If you're making this up, I'm sure you would leave out such a nonsensical image, but they said it was standing still and yet simultaneously appeared to be rushing towards them with intent. Well, they were both overcome with fear. Jumping back into the car, they drove off as fast as they could. And once again, Naomi said that she had the horrible feeling that this figure, whatever it was somehow chasing the car, even though she could see nothing in the rearview mirror. It's that same loathsome feeling of pursuit, as if the entity is projecting the fear upon them. Ever since the summer of 1976, the woods around Morn and Smith Old Church in Cornwall have been the haunt of a grotesque, surreal entity known as the Owl Man. This winged horror has been seen many times over the years. One witness, a woman called Sally, had seen the monster with her friend, and she wrote to John Downs, he's director of the Centre of Fortean Zoology, some 24 years after the event. Now 38 and married and living in Pembroke in Wales, she had been told about John and his work by a friend and found his details online. The event clearly terrified her, and she recounted it in her detailed letter. She and her friend had been walking in the woods when a hissing sound had alerted them to something odd. And then,
I had seen a horror film in Plymouth a few months before, a werewolf film with Peter Cushing. It was the first thing I thought of when I saw it. I thought it was a werewolf. The face wasn't really like an owl, thinking back. It was like a frowning, sneering, black thing. The eyes were burning, glaring, and reddish. I don't know if it had fur or feathers, but it was grey and grizzled, just like the werewolf in the film. I knew right away that it was real. It wasn't like a monster in the films that look rubbery and fake. It just looked like a very weird, frightening animal, as real as any animal in a zoo. I've no idea what it was. My head hurts even thinking about it. It was more frightening than I can really describe. I remember blood rushing to my head, making it pound. It just stood there for what might have been a minute. I wanted to run, but couldn't. It was so so evil. Intensely so. When it moved, that nearly did it. I nearly started running. Its arms or wings or whatever went out, and it just rose up through the trees, straight up through the evergreens. It didn't flap. It didn't make a sound. And then weirdly, I thought costume, the word costume, for the first time, because the legs looked wrong. Then the feet, black hooking things. I have no idea how it stood up on them. They were like an earwig's tailpiece. We were shaking like leaves. I was thinking that someone was going to come out of the woods laughing at their trick, but really I knew that it couldn't possibly be a trick. On one level, my mind simply wasn't accepting it. It still doesn't, in a way. And that's how I got over it, I think. By pretending that it hadn't really happened. I don't know how it could have disappeared like it did. The woods weren't that thick. Not thick enough to hide what I can only think of as a monster. I know that sounds silly, but it is perhaps the most apt way to describe it. It seemed to just vanish, like a ghost.
John got in contact with another witness, now an adult and a well-known scientist. He was walking through the woods at night when his girlfriend, both were about 14 at the time. The pair saw the creature at about 9:30 p.m. It was squatting on a branch of a conifer tree, gripping the branch with black pincer-like claws. Sound familiar? It was silvery grey and had glowing eyes, and as the torch beam fell on it, the thing drew its head back and leapt off the tree. And he said this, quote,
"The morning owlman is a ridiculous thing that only a bizarre attention seeker would ever pretend to have seen. And I am angry that I have seen this creature. You cannot possibly imagine what effect an event such as this can have on your life. Following our return to Southampton, both Sally and I kept seeing the owlman. I saw it in the woods behind my house, and Sally in the woods she passed on the way home from school. Still now, even today, if I look at trees, I look for the shape of an owlman in the tree. I think that owlman is maybe like other psychic phenomena. It's a kind of projection towards people that it involves."
Now in his late 40s, Gavin is still deeply scared by the thing he saw all those years ago. And so, have you ever encountered something that leaves you with the feeling of nameless dread we have explored tonight? Share your experiences in the comments. But also, how might we understand these distressing encounters, dramatic encounters? Well, of course, one is to simply dismiss them. To speak of dragons and sea serpents or Bigfoot roaming around the northeast of England can sound ridiculous to many. To be honest, I grew up in the northeast, so maybe you've got a few friends who could qualify as a Bigfoot, but that's an aside. But this is really, for me, I think, as ridiculous as all of some of these stories sound, it can be about linguistics. In another time and another place, that the Bigfoot-style creature would have been called a woodwose or a wild man or a troll. Or what about that owl man? When sighted in the trees of a forest, it's hard not to equate it with the natural world, and we call it the owl man. But if someone saw a malevolent and winged creature creeping through the hallways of an old castle or domestic house, it might be labeled differently as a demon or a ghost or an alien even. Sometimes the context or location in which we see things affects which category we subsequently slot them into. How many of you out there might say, "I'm not a ghost person, I'm a Bigfoot person," or "I believe in aliens, but demon sightings are stupid"? Well, perhaps if we were to strip away all the labels and the nicknames we have for paranormal phenomenon, we might be left not with many different disciplines, but rather expressions of the same discipline, like a unifying theory of the paranormal, one where multiple witnesses across the world have genuinely reported seeing frightening and unknown creatures that bring with them not just the shock of their and surprise of their appearance, but a deep and lingering horror of something oppressive and relentless, a dark force that will watch and follow you now that you caught its attention. I wonder, what happens if you run into one of these things on a lonely woodland path or by the shores of a lapping yet unpeaceful lake or loch? How might you react when you encounter the nameless dread. I'm Peter Laws, and you've been listening to Frightful. For more encounters with terrifying creatures, check out the episode on real-life gremlins with bizarre, intense accounts of weird encounters. And if you want more stuff from me, why not check out my Patreon at patreon.com/Peter Laws. But until next time, keep an eye on the shadows. They might just have their eyes on you. Good night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.